because you're jumping back into the gap. Outlet to coach, it's either sideline, two on the side, three on the side. That's off the second cut. Lead the country in offensive rebound.
Hey, coach. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Oliver. Let's share the game. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. Excited today to have Aaron Fern with us. Coach Fern is currently an assistant coach with the Charlotte 49ers, NCAA Division I basketball, but most coaches around the world would know him from his work in the NBL, the Australian New Zealand Professional Basketball League, where he coached Cairns, Taipans, and had tremendous success there, coach. I believe it was 9 years there as the head coach, and was it 20 years overall with that program?
Yeah, started as a development player and worked into the assistant coaching ranks, and then had an opportunity to be the head coach and did that for 9 years and really enjoyed it. Now on to the next chapter.
Well, and that's awesome, and welcome to the podcast. Really excited again to talk to you because, coach, there's been so many people that have told me wonderful things about you, talked about you as the foremost X's and O's coach in Australia, and you know, even getting into some of the things that you did with recruitment and development. You've been involved in some tremendous talent identification in terms of some players that have gone on success, and then also the development of players within your system as well. And we could go to a lot of those areas, coach, and maybe we will at some point, but I really want to focus in on this tagging up system, the system of sending five to the offensive class, because this podcast is about stimulating coaches' thinkings about things. And I'm really excited to get into some of those details. And maybe you can start with just a brief overview of what that system is.
Well, it originally came from my first 2 or 3 years in the NBL. The Perth Wildcats and the New Zealand Breakers were basically the two dominant clubs in the NBL during that time, and they were just fed up of getting my butt kicked on the offensive glass. I had this mindset of being really physical on the offensive glass and coming up with extra possessions, and as much as you practice and try and prepare for those games, it never really, no one else in the league could really keep them off the glass and that offensive perspective. So I was like, okay, you can't beat them, then go join them. So I needed to come up with a system that made sense to the players. My assistant coach at the time, Mick Downer, and I put a lot of thought into, I walked in one day and said, all right, we're just going to send everybody to the glass. But there need to be some rules. So, you know, we came up with some rules and thought through it a lot and started to implement it. And like looking at anything, you know, you don't have to believe in what we do, but that's what we believe in. And we gave our guys the instruction and showed them video and it from practice, and ultimately wanted us to be on the front foot defensively. So, you know, long story short, the shot goes up. We send everybody to the glass with our rules, getting on the high side and basically just try and make it a 50-50 contest on the glass. Now, if we don't come up with the offensive rebound, we're basically in essence in full court man-to-man and creating some pressure full court. And the NBL is fairly, you know, very different from style of play. Some teams like Adelaide play extremely fast. You got other teams that play slow, medium pace. We actually found our defensive transition numbers giving up points improved by us statting it, and something that we've continued to play. I mean, new guys that have come into the system, imports from the US, guys from other teams have definitely found it a little different to start with, obviously, but find it very easy because they don't really have to think. They just shot goes up and tag up on the guy that's guarding them and basically scrum them into the paint and try and make it a contest on the glass. And they've enjoyed it. The players have enjoyed it because it allows them to be pretty physical.
Well, coach, and we're going to dive into some of the details of this, but as a general thing for coaches, even if you, like, again, the game of basketball is trending the other direction. So I love this because it challenges the trend. Whether that trend is right or not, at different levels, the argument would be that maybe, you know, sending everyone back in transition on defense isn't the best thing. So I love this, particularly looking at this at other levels of basketball. But even more so, what I love about this is that this isn't just about offensive rebounding. This is about transition defense, right? And it's about the individual fundamental of offensive rebounding. So even if you only send three to the glass, I think some of the things that you're teaching and you're talking about apply to those three players and some really interesting concepts that go with it. So you've talked a little bit about why. Let's get into a little bit more of the what in terms of that and kind of each of those rules. We can dive a little bit deeper into those things. So I think the first one is being on the front foot. Can you talk about that, what that actually means?
Yeah, so generally what happens with guards in particular is the shot will go up and they'll start to backpedal or get back safety and protect back. We're definitely the other way. So the shot goes up, got to get on the front foot, and you got to go make contact with the guy that's defending you. So you've got to start with forward motion towards the rim. So, you know, a lot of shots go up, hit the rim, a lot of them bounce around, big guys are battling for it, and they all bounce around the foul line area or that kind of range. And typically your guards are on the back foot and don't come up with that rebound, where we show video to our guys, like, well, if you got on the front foot here and made contact with your man, you're in the contest for that rebound. That's really, really important that you get on the front foot and everybody's on the front foot. So they've got to be making forward motion towards the rim versus retreating, which most defensive transition systems are kind of modeled that way.
And that's great. And that's, again, we've seen it so much with offensive rebounding where a player will just accept that they're not going to get the offensive rebound, or they literally just stand right behind the box out.
Yeah, and just on that point is when you do tag up and get on the front foot, you got to get yourself in a position over the high side. You know, you can't go underneath. You got to get on the high side to make it a 50-50 competition. Obviously, you're not going to win it every time, but I want the guys to be in that contest.
Like, again, it's a system-wide philosophy, but again, that application, I think, applies to any type of offensive rebounding. And the second point is going over the top. Is that right?
Right. So if you're in the corner or you're on the wing, you got to tag up coming in on the front foot over the high side. So ultimately, you're trying to drive the defender towards the baseline area because you don't want to go underneath. A lot of offensive rebounders, when they do go offensive rebound, they all duck underneath and basically take themselves out of rebounding position, where we want our guys to go over the high side. And ultimately, if you have five guys doing that and they come in over the top of the defender that's trying to block them out, and you can, you know, I use the language, scrum the defense into the baseline or into the paint. If you don't come up with the rebound, well, then you're on the high side and you're protecting your basket and you're in a position to detrans and back the other way. Where if you're underneath and you don't come up with it, well, you've given now the offense the opportunity just to rip it down the floor, and we're running from behind trying to chase you down. So that's the philosophy of coming over the high side and tagging up. So if you don't come up with the board, then you're in a position to protect your basket.
Well, it's great because I think about what we teach in terms of boxing out. And if an offensive rebounder gets below us, then we talk about pushing that player lower. So it totally makes sense what you're saying based on that.
Exactly right.
So the third part then, which leads into everyone's question is, well, wait a minute, what about transition defense? And your philosophy then that transfers to transition defense is defend who defended you. So basically whoever you're scrumming becomes your matchup in the full court in recovering on defense.
It does. So, you know, a couple like of rules, which people always ask, well, what if someone runs out, you know, contests your shot and just continues to run down the floor? Will you, by rule, have got to go with that player? So then it becomes, well, maybe it's only four guys on the offensive glass because you've got to go with the run out guy. So any run out guy that takes off, you've got to go with him. So that's rule number one. Two, your matchup. So through the course of that possession, if at some point the four man switched onto the point guard, well, that's the matchup until you can either A, sort it out as you would transition defensively back, or in the half court, you get to an opportunity where you can switch back onto your like size matchups, which, you know, over time our guys got really, really good at. And look, people got to understand that it builds into a system, right? So I'm a big post-trap guy. So, you know, if we did come down the floor and the point guard was defending the five-man, for example, and that one defensive possession, well, if it went into the post on the mismatch, well, we go trap the post and then rotate the point guard out. And, you know, so there's lots of layers here. But, yeah, to answer your question, yes, your tag up is your matchup on D-trans and get ball picked up, take away sideline kicker heads, sit in the plugger spot, you know, just slow the ball down and contain it until we get into the half court.
Well, there's a certain brilliance to this, especially when we're talking about lower levels, and particularly youth levels or development levels, because you tend to have less practice time, you tend to have less opportunities to develop things. And to be honest, I think you should be focused more on offensive development anyways for players. So this, in a way, simplifies things for those type of coaches who can basically, again, put in a system which is very simple. As you said, there's many layers of depth to cover for things, but again, at lower levels, you don't have to worry about it. So the question is, though, as the game is trending and, you know, the NBA and professional level, and I'm guessing even the NCAA level, although you can speak to that, the trend is to not offensive rebound generally. So are you now, after having been exposed to the NCAA game, are you believing that this type of system can work at that level as well?
Man, I reckon it would work great over here with the length and athleticism. I mean, yeah, I would be very intrigued to see a team do it full time, you know, and make that a massive emphasis. I mean, for me, you want it, it's a possession game. Take care of the ball, try and gain extra possessions. You know, like we generally did a very good job of taking care of the ball, and we were a pretty good offensive rebounding team that gave us extra possession. We felt that we had to do that with the just the teams that we had over the years. We lacked a little bit of talent compared to the big budget teams. So you've got to find some other way of gaining extra possessions and other methods to try and make yourself more competitive. I would be very interested to see it over here. I mean, Basketball Australia looked at it for a period of time with their national programs. You know, it definitely became a little bit of a trend in Australia with junior programs and so on and so forth. At the end of the day, the feedback that I got from players was, and coaches, it just, and you mentioned it earlier, it just simplifies things. Shot goes up, tag up on your man over the high side, and let's compete for the offensive rebound.
Then you know who you've got in transition, which is the other simple part. And it removes a little bit of that communication and all those different things that kind of frustrate us as coaches, because we know no matter how much we practice it, players aren't as effective communicating in transition.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, I've played for coaches that are like, well, all right, we need to build a rebounding triangle, and we need a guy over the top, and we need a guy safety, but if the shot's taken from here, you need to be here this time, and but that shot there, you need to be there this time. Like, there's no doubt a lot of thinking and decision-making and a heck of a lot of communication going on to defend in transition to take away those easy baskets that teams are trying to get. And we just tried to eliminate that. And I've enjoyed coaching it. I know the players that I've coached have enjoyed playing it. It just, I mentioned it earlier, allows them to be really competitive and really physical and get on the front foot instead of generally what defensive transition is. You're kind of on the back foot trying to contain. Well, we're on the front foot trying to be really aggressive, and you got to worry about us. So, yeah, interesting concept, but enjoyed implementing it and developing it and tweaking it, and that's what the game's about.
With Cairns, did you do this with your junior program as well? So was this system-wide than everything that you guys do there?
Yeah, we did. So obviously we had a great close relationship with Cairns basketball. So all our junior rep programs that myself and the assistant coaches mentored a lot of those rep programs as we implemented the tagging up system within our whole club. So, you know, a lot of our junior programs were on the front foot tagging up, attacking offensive rebounding. So, you know, obviously the junior level, it's challenging at times, but ultimately the big picture for us was kids that come through Cairns basketball, as they come through the age groups, by the time they get to under 16s, under 18s, under 23s, you know, the semi-pro team in Cairns, you know, those guys that become the cream of the crop and start knocking on the NBL door will have, obviously, have a great grasp and of tagging up in that system. And yeah, they enjoy doing it as well, because again, it just allows them to be physical and competitive, which ultimately the Australian athlete kind of enjoy.
So two questions come from that. The one is being, obviously, those players that have gone through your system and then say they rise to the senior team. they're well versed in this. They understand it. They've done it. So it's a little bit habitual for them. But when you bring in a foreign player, an import, an American player that's been brought up in a system where it's like, you know, your first three steps in transition on defense are the most important steps, how quickly can they adjust? And then philosophically, did you find that they gradually bought in because they understood the advantage of what you were teaching?
Yeah, they did. You know, I've had some, been fortunate to have some pretty good imports, you know, Scotty Wilbekin, Torrey Craig, Travis Trice, you know, those type of guys. Scoochy Smith last year, you know, like it's different for them, no question. And think about some of the coaches that those guys have played for. So very kind of counter to what they've been taught. It takes them a little time, but again, just practicing it, drilling it with the drills that we do, the video feedback from practice, the video feedback from games. You know, see, you got in this contest here and look what you came up with. That's another possession for us. Now, when we all do it and we're all coming at you, you know, that can be a problem. But the general feedback is like, it's just a lot easier. It's just simple. Our shot goes up, get on the front foot, get over the high side, and let's compete. So, yeah, I've felt that they've enjoyed the contest. Again, something different. And typically, something different is always met with a little resistance, but it's not to say that it's wrong. And like I mentioned earlier, not everyone's going to agree, and that's fine. But that's what we believe in, and that's what we found was successful and something I definitely believe in and moving forward.
And it's great because we could get into a whole depth of conversation just on that piece alone, which is a lot of coaches are unwilling to try new things because what they've been a part of either as a coach or as a player in the past, it's, well, that's just the way we've always done. So I love this, even just this concept of challenging their thinking a little bit and saying, hey, listen, especially, I believe this can work at the collegiate and pro level, but at a lot of these levels, say AAU, et cetera, where they have limited practice time, bring a team together essentially for a few practices, then go play a whole bunch of games. It's such an easy concept to be able to create an advantage, as you said, with possessions.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I've done some coaching clinics around Australia and definitely sitting in the crowd of some old traditional coaches that look at me sideways and think that I'm crazy when I first start talking about it. You know, like, well, you know, my defensive transition system is I send everyone to the glass and they look at me like I'm crazy. But and when I start to get into some detail and the reasoning why and the layer to the actual defensive transition part, you know, it's been interesting to see their view change a little bit and, I understand and see what you're getting to because it's not, like I said, it's not just about sending five guys to the glass recklessly. It's not that at all. There's a system there. There's a why behind it. And then there's the next layer of the D-trans and getting back and containing the ball and slowing it down and getting into the half court, which, like I said, gets back into your next layer of how you guard on balls and trapping the post and so on and so forth. But it's just that initial part of shot up, attack the glass. All right, let's slow the ball down. And that's basically the picture.
Well, it's great. And again, on this podcast, you don't have to defend it in any way because we're all about thinking differently and just challenging cultural norms or historical norms in coaching. But coach, the other thought is, so they're essentially in this scrum concept. They're trying to create this one-on-one where they're connected, you know, basically pinning the player so that if the rebound goes over top, it's their rebound. Are you also trying to teach separation sometimes from that player? Like if that player doesn't box out, are you still going to connect with that player or are you going to space to get the rebound?
Nah, so you do have the habit of running past your block out because, guys do not block out.
100%.
I've coached many guys that do not block out as much as you tell them to, but you've got to have the discipline not to run past him because if it bounces over your head, then you're basically, in essence, run underneath or run by him and you can't do that. You've got to just basically hit him and drive him in. And you got to do it, obviously, legally, but you know, it does become a very physical contest. And I would assume, and referees' feedback to me in the NBL is that when we are on it, it's definitely challenging to referee because you got five guys scrumming their match up into the paint. Like, it becomes a pretty physical contest, especially at the pro level. So you can't run past those guys that do not block you out. Your matchup, you just have to basically go tag him and drive him down to the baseline or into the paint.
Well, it's such an important point, and I should have asked that earlier, because I think that helps everyone's understanding of what you're saying about tagging up. But I also meant to ask, and I will now since we brought that up, is there a higher percentage of offensive rebounding fouls going over the back? Different situations like that, because especially if we're talking about the inconsistency of officials talking about things. Like, I'm seeing a trend at our level of way too many box out fouls. Like, we're boxing out and we're getting called for fouls on box outs. So I'm curious if you've seen some data on that, or based on, you know, this type of system, does it create such a physical battle that the refs kind of don't know what to call, so they don't call anything?
Yeah, it's a bit that way.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But it's not, it's definitely, we don't try and teach you're not scrumming into the back of the matchup, you're scrumming into the high side of the matchup. So you've got to show some discipline. If it comes over your head or between the two of you, well, it's a 50-50 contest, let's go to war on it and let's see who comes up with it. If it's out of your area, then don't reach over the top, and you wouldn't do that if you're just doing basic drills like that. It's just, you got to show some discipline for sure. But that's, you know, I'm big about the discipline. And obviously the layers of it are the shot go up, get on the front foot. B, it's got to be on the high side. C, you got to go with a run out guy. D, you can't run past a guy that's not blocking you out. E, don't jump over his back if it's out of your kind of area to actually get the rebound. Like, there's levels there of discipline that you need to really show, but I just want you to be in that contest if the ball does bounce that way. And generally a lot of the times it does, especially when five guys are all on it. And when you show clips of the whole team doing it where the shot goes up and everyone's on the front foot on the high side scrumming in, yeah, it's kind of controlled chaos in a way. There's a physicality, and, you know, definitely the opposition over the years knew that we were attacking the offensive glass, and you can see it, shot goes up, man, they're all trying to find where we're running in from. And, you know, you come up with extra possessions, you know, you're talking 3, 4, 5 extra possessions. That's big, you know, especially in the pro game, that's big. You can get those extra possessions. So it all kind of circles back to what I said very first from the start of the podcast here is, you know, the New Zealand Breakers and Perth Wildcats at the time were just phenomenal offensive rebounding teams, and they were the best in the league. They were the teams winning the championship year after year. And it was frustrating. You sat there as a coach, just felt like you're getting your butt beat up, and you were. Well, don't complain about it. Find a solution and go join them and come up with a method to compete with them and get on that level. And that's what we, in essence, tried to do.
Coach, when they're in the scrum, where are their hands? Do you want their hands above, like, yeah, above their head? Where are the hands?
Yeah, up. Don't scrum in and, you know, obviously there's the habit of putting your hands in the back of a block out guy and trying to push him out of the way at the point of potentially grabbing the rebound. Now get your hands up, drive him in with your body. You know, you made the point earlier, a lot of block out fouls are getting called. Yeah, because technically we're teaching it wrong. You know, a lot of guys block out, wrap their arms around the guy you're blocking out, and then you're basically holding them in. You know, you got to teach them to get their hands up above their shoulders and get them out. And we developed this habit of just blocking out and trying to block out, wrapping up guys with our arms instead of using our body and moving our feet, you know, and being able to keep your feet firing and slide side to side to keep that aggressive offensive rebounder between the ball and you. So that's why those fouls are getting called, like you said.
When you talk about extra possessions, can you talk a little bit about what then is your offensive rebounding system when you get one? What are you teaching in terms of, we get an offensive rebound, we've got an extra possession? Obviously, I think your last year was last year. Were you guys the 14-second reset?
Yeah, so we're the 14-second reset under FIBA. So, yeah, look, it's obviously you get it. You got an easy bucket, put it back up, kick out for a three. If not, then we, under the 14-second shot clock, quickly transitioned into running just a simple horns action. And playing because you don't have a lot of time. By the time you get the rebound, you kick it out and get reset, you're probably at 11, 10, 9, you know, at that area. So, you know, you definitely got to not mess around. You got to punch it out and look for those easy opportunities and then just play simple spread, pick and roll, or the guy's got the ability to go by people and get into the paint and play off 2 feet and find teammates or finish. Well, then that's generally the concepts.
And the other thing that this kind of relates to, I think, is how much did this philosophy dictate what you ran on offense? Like the concept of predictable shots. Did there need to be more predictable shots, or does it matter?
No, I think it matters no matter what you run. And we played a fairly deliberate style of game. You know, we ran the flow offense, backdoor dribble handoff, and all our little wrinkles and reads out of it. But, you know, I definitely wanted my teams to play with predictability. It's a lot easier to offensive rebound when you have that internal feel of when shots are going up and the ball movement and player movement was at a high level, and you could develop that rhythm of when the shot's going up and, you know, you're already half a step ahead because you know it's going up, bang, you're on the front foot and we're coming at you. So, yeah, you're spot on. Your predictability on shot selection needs to be at a high level, but it should be no matter what defensive transition system you're running. You know, like when it's unpredictable, your team's off the map and you just get beat that way. You got to play the game on the same page.
Whether you have data on this or not, I'm curious. So you talked a little bit about controlling pace. Do you have any data on how much better your defensive transition was, or, you know, some of the advantages of doing this in terms of your defensive transition? Did you generally not give up much in transition?
No, we didn't, actually. It, you know, obviously the system before, which was in essence send three to the glass and get someone over the top and get someone safety. I mean, we statted our defensive transition numbers. You know, we wanted to be good in that area, not giving up easy baskets, because our feeling was that if we could get you in the half court against the pack, then we're going to force you to take tough shots. You're going to have to work hard to get good shots. Then when we went to the tag-up system, and, you know, we do have numbers, you know, our defensive transition points allowed got better. Our offensive rebounding numbers went up, so we got extra possessions. Obviously, you have the games where it just doesn't go your way, but consistently we were pretty good in that area at containing you and not giving you easy baskets, which confirmed kind of what we did. You know, we just didn't. And I've always mentioned that at the clinics that we've done, is that our data proves that what we did was effective. And so we continue to implement it and keep getting better at it.
Well, I keep coming back to this, that it removes gray areas. And defensive transition seems to have a lot of gray areas, like whose responsibility, all these different things when it's left to that. Yeah. The other part is I do feel like there's an over-obsession with matchups. Right? Like that you say that you have layers to cover up the matchup. And at most of our levels, the matchups aren't that bad, really. I mean, when we're talking the pro level, which you've tried this at, that's where the matchups are potentially really bad. And you found a way to cover for that. So I think that's great for coaches to understand, because at lower levels, the matchups aren't as bad in transition.
Dave Smart is one of the best coaches in the world, and now you can learn from him with never before available access. 3 all-access practices and 1 defensive coaching clinic are available at davesmartbasketball.com. What makes these all-access practice and clinic videos so unique? Dave Smart has won 12 national championships and has a winning percentage of 92%. Dave Smart's Force Weak Hand defensive system is world-renowned and has never been shared in this way before. Dave Smart has a winning record in over 50 games versus NCAA Division I teams, having beaten Wichita State, Baylor, Wisconsin, and many others. Dave Smart is recognized by Jay Wright, Mick Cronin, Jay Triano, and many other top coaches in the world as one of the best minds in basketball. Learn, from one of the greatest minds in the game who opened his doors and shared the game with us from one of the most successful basketball programs in the world. Go to davesmartbasketball.com now to learn more and to purchase all four videos.
No, they're not. And you're exactly right. But like I mentioned earlier, there would be possessions where our point guard is guarding a big, strong five or four man, and he's the first guy back, and you've got to cover the basket with the big dude coming straight down the lane. Well, yeah, for that one possession, you got to battle and fight and be physical against him and front him and buy us time to either A, quickly switch back because it's off the ball, or if they come down and just throw it in the post, well, like I said, our next layer was we trap the post so aggressively all the time that, you know, the five man would come down on that trap and then we'd rotate that point guard out. So we're back on our matchup, you know, like that's how we covered those situations of tagging up and covering your matchup. So, yeah, we found a method and system to do that.
So coming back to the youth question that you worked with this within your youth system, did you find players were overall more aggressive then? Because I think one of the challenges for us as coaches in youth development is usually the best players are the most aggressive players. We can talk about that on offense, but it's a similar thing on defense, and I would think it's a similar thing in offensive rebounding, that those players that get a certain confidence from being allowed to be aggressive, and psychologically, this system gives them that freedom to be aggressive.
Yeah, I think there's two sides of the coin, right? So firstly, yeah, it makes you have to be physical. You've got to block out. You have to be competitive offensively. So there is that physical confrontation between two players, and instantly on the floor, you're trying to get 10. So I just feel that you're probably not going to be a great defensive rebounding team blocking out if you don't kind of practice against it every day. Like, every day of practice, when a shot goes up, we are crashing the offensive glass. So in turn, we've got to be great at blocking each other out of practice. And there's that physical battle there that I think is what the game is. Like, it is a physical game. Like, don't say it's not. It is that. And within the rules, I get that. But we found with our junior kids that they enjoyed that physical battle. In essence, most Australian kids like it. You know, a lot of them grow up playing Australian rules football. There's, I'm going to hit you, you're going to hit me, and they just understand it's what part of the sport is, and then they come across and start playing basketball, and it's not as physical, but it can be. And, yeah, our junior kids enjoyed it. You do the drills with them and teach them how to block out, and you teach them how to tag up and get in there and bang bodies and compete for the rebound, and it gets physical, and all right, that contest is over, now we're on D-trans, or not, they came up with the offensive rebound, bang, we've got to sit back and defend again. Yeah, they enjoyed it.
And I have to ask this for any of the women's coaches that are coaching girls or females out there. Do you have some information from some female teams that have used this system? Did they find similar results in terms of that it developed a little bit more physicality in their players, a little bit more aggression? And I would think it would have a huge impact in that game as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I know some of the Australian junior national teams have tagged up and they've enjoyed it as well. You know, they felt that their girls brought a level of physicality against other international teams that they didn't like that physicality. They didn't like that intent to just be super aggressive on the offensive glass, and then there'd be a physical contest all the time. I mean, the feedback was generally really positive and something that they enjoyed coaching and the players enjoyed doing. You know, it just changes your mindset a little bit from being a kind of a defensive moment to being an offensive moment. You know, it just changes the mindset a little bit. Yeah, shots going up instead of, oh man, we've got to get back, we've got to protect the ball. It's, you know, no, the shot goes up, man, we're on the front foot, we're trying to get after this thing, we're trying to come up with the ball. So it just changes the mindset and the physicality improves.
Well, and I think the value of this is tremendous, but I think one of the most valuable pieces is exactly what you said, changing the psychology of your players and getting them in a more aggressive mindset. So it's really cool. Coach, you've coached incredibly high level and a bunch of teams have used this stuff. So what have you found the best methods of attacking this type of system are by your opponents or by opponents. Has anyone come up with anything that's given you pause for thought or created a danger for you guys that you have to learn how to compensate for?
No, not really. I mean, Adelaide 36ers in Australia would be the most aggressive in transition mile. I mean, they're extremely aggressive in transition. High-paced team, we would still do the same thing. We'd tag up, and that was our way of trying to slow them down, which is easier said than done. But no, I think if you follow your rules, you put yourself in a strong position. I just feel like with the fast-paced teams, if you go the other way and you're retreating, they just come at you with more speed because they got more room. I'm trying to cut the room. I'm trying to cut your space down because I've got more players up the floor on their matchup earlier than sprinting back trying to find people. You know, our way was to try and clog the floor and flood it and pack it in and just try and slow you down as much as we could and try and contain you until we got back to the half court. So, yeah, to answer your question, I haven't really found teams that come up with systems to try and counter what we do. Follow our rules like anything, you know, like if any nine balls or trap at the post, you don't do that stuff well, you get your butt kicked too. So I'm no different with this.
Well, and it's traditionally not something coaches would spend a lot of time game planning for either. They'd spend a lot more time game planning to attack your defense or to obviously defend your offense. And now all of a sudden you're adding a different component. Oh, we've got to try and for this short prep or this turnaround time now figure out how to attack your offensive rebounding system. And it's probably, again, unlikely unless it's part of their overall philosophy that they would be effective in attacking it.
Yeah, I think what you mentioned earlier, talked about, is a lot of guards are not great at blocking out. And now we put you in a position where you have to block out every time. And yeah, you can see opposition coaches getting after their players because they just, you can see it on video. They're not even thinking about trying to block out the guard, you know, and we're in there coming up with extra possessions. So you're right. It's just a prep thing that you've got to spend time on and something that some players are not very good at blocking out.
So the other layer is that obviously more three-point shots are being shot. Is there a danger with the scrum to be able to like push too far in so that a lot of these long rebounds are a little bit harder to get because you've kind of created, you know, too much spacing away from the basket? Or is that something that you would educate your players about in terms of the positioning of the shot or the depth of the shot, different things like that?
Yeah, I just, the longer the shot, the longer the rebound. So if we pushed you towards the baseline into the paint, then generally a lot of those shots are going over their head and gives us an opportunity to come up with the rebound. So, you know, the other little dynamic to it as well is, and we taught this, is if you were in that 50-50 contest and you couldn't quite come up with it, we'll then try and hit it out or hit it out back towards halfway so we can come up with it, or hit it out across the sideline or baseline generally, you know, just kill the possession. Now we can get set and contain you. So, you know, just following the rules, you know, push them down, push them in, put yourself in a position that if it does bounce out off the rim over your head, then you're in a position to come up with it.
Now, I may be wrong here, but from something I heard from someone, like you actually teach and you're okay with one hand rebounding as well. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you talk about that? Because I think, again, there's this antiquated tradition in terms of two hands to the ball on a rebound. But realities are, you know, you can be probably a more effective rebounder if you can get one to the ball.
Yeah, like I just want them to be in the contest, be competitive, you know, like you can go get it with two hands, go get it. If you can, then try and tap it and tap it up, tap it out, tap it to keep it alive. So one of your other teammates can come in and go grab it with one hand or two hands. Like, whatever you got to do to keep the thing alive that we can come up with it, but within our rule, don't take yourself out of position. Don't get on the inside your block out. Don't get underneath your block out. Like, stay in position with discipline. And as a team, we can team rebound because you're doing your job. So, yeah, no major emphasis on how you have to go rebound with two hands. I mean, do whatever you got to do to come up with it.
Love that. And is there anything specific you teach on a size disadvantage? So say your 5'10 guard is tagging their 6'10 center. Is there anything specific you're talking about in terms of size disadvantage either way in one of these scrum or tag situations?
I just generally try and get the smaller guy to be even more aggressive and more physical, because the refs ain't going to penalize a little point guard smashing up against a big center, you know. But what do most big guys do when they get hit hard by a little dude? Well, they get ticked off and try and get more physical and start throwing little dudes around. And generally they foul. So that would be the same philosophy in the post, you know. Your center's been is posting up against a point guard. Point guards get really physical on your front, get really physical behind, get your head in there and tick the big guy off and get him to start throwing you around a little bit. And generally they come off second best. So same thing with the rebounding.
Yeah, it's great. And you keep coming back to psychology and, you know, the psychology of their officials, the psychology of your players, and the psychology of the opponent in their reaction. And it's great stuff. And I love that. The other question that was brought up by someone that wanted me to ask you is, so you're playing against a unique outlet passer. And I don't know if you ever have, but like a Kevin Love, a Jokic, or someone like that, that can really take advantage in terms of an outlet. It essentially doesn't matter because you're tagged up and you have those responsibilities. So there's no space for them to be able to outlet, please.
No, you're right. So if you do your job, come in over the high side, scrum him in, he has better position because a rebound bounced that way. Well, you're right there on him to start with. He doesn't have space to turn around and just fire it up the floor like a Kevin Love, like, for example. So because you're on the matchup and you're jamming his space and you're on the ball and your teammates are taking away kicker heads and sitting in the plugger spots if you're one pass away where they're trying to rip it up the floor. So yeah, no, that never became an issue if we did it right.
And again, like, I don't see it as much, but I don't know, it was probably 15 years ago, 20 years ago, that I was with a coach in a defensive system that taught jamming the rebounder. And this, again, it was so effective that they could just never get a quick outlet because that rebounder always had someone there jamming them so that they couldn't either push out with the dribble straight ahead or they couldn't get a quick outlet because they had to deal with the pressure. So yeah. This applies to that as well.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right.
So, Coach, I guess, again, just any type of dangers here, like any disadvantage, really? Like, why are we not all using this? Is it just really that we aren't brave enough as coaches?
Yeah, probably. Any dangers? Well, yeah, the danger is if you don't commit to it. If you don't all commit to it and you don't have your entire team committing to it. And there are multiple examples, thousands of examples with us where we'd have four guys tagging up, doing their thing, doing it right. And then your point guard sitting out the top on his heels, retreating, and the ball bounces off the rim, hits the point guard who's the defensive point guard, and he catches it and turns and he's got space to just rip it down the floor and he's at you. You know, that's what we're trying to stop. You know, we don't want to give you space if you come up with the ball. We want to jam you, flood, pack it in, however you want to term it. But like anything, you know, if you're hard showing on a wing on ball screen and you're one of your players behind that on ball is not following the rules on how you defend it, well, then it breaks down. So it's no different with this. There's got to be 100% commitment every possession. Shot goes up, get on the front foot and follow the rules and do it every time. And if you don't, well, then there's going to be those possessions where the ball bounces that way to that man that's open and bang, they're off the floor if they've got the ability to rip it down. So that's ultimately the danger, but I think it's what you find if you don't do what I, like I mentioned earlier with the on-ball D, or we trap the post big to big and we don't get a low eye and a high eye established and the player breaks down, well, then you get exposed. So no different with this.
Yeah, no, it's great. And it probably answers the next question, which is, I know some coaches are thinking already about, is there a compromise? Is there a way to do this with just three players and then have your other two back? And basically you're answering that and saying no.
No.
But some of these concepts from an offensive rebounding standpoint do make sense regardless of whether you use the system.
Well, exactly. I mean, okay, so for example, here with our program, well, we send a lot of guys back. You know, we're kind of counter to this method And it's not to say that it's wrong. I mean, you know, Coach Sanchez has come from Virginia. Well, that's what they do. And that's what we do here. So we're not big on offensive rebounding. We're more about getting back, building a wall and protecting the paint. But if we do send two to the glass or one to the glass, well, it's still taking some of these concepts here. Well, no, don't go rebound underneath and go stand underneath the basket because you're not grabbing any offensive rebound there. The only one you're grabbing is the one that goes through the net. So come in over the high side. Try and force your man into a position where he's out of position if the ball comes that way. I spent some time this offseason with the New Zealand national team during the Commonwealth Games, and you know, I've coached against Mika Vekona for years with the New Zealand Breakers. He now plays with the Brisbane Bullets. But spending time with the national team and practice every day and breaking video down and watching them play, his rebounding preparation has got to be the best I've ever seen. You know, he was just masterful at positioning that blockout guy in a position where if the ball came his way, he was in more of an advantaged position to come up with the offensive rebound than you were because he would drive you underneath. He would drive you towards the baseline. He would push you in the direction and into a space where you were, it was a low percentage for you to come up with the rebounding. I mean, he was phenomenal at it. And basically, that's what we try and do. It's all about rebounding preparation and forcing the defense into disadvantaged positions, which that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to scrum you in to cut down your space. And that was definitely educational and interesting seeing, you know, Mika Vekona do that because he's a 6'6 foreman. He's just very strong and very smart and just showed you that the smarts of the game can really help you.
Great. And again, for the record, I mean, you did run pack line with this system back in Australia. And, you know, I'm sure coaches were thinking that because Coach Sanchez, pack line coach, comes from that Virginia tree a little bit, or Dick Bennett tree. So this aligns essentially with any defensive philosophy, but it aligned with the pack line quite nicely.
Yeah, it does. That's great. It's fantastic.
Yeah, no, that's great. And Coach, I mean, so many things to be able to talk about. Maybe just kind of one last question out of curiosity, because your son came with you, and what are some of the differences maybe that you've noticed in terms of playing basketball in America versus him playing basketball back in Australia? What are some of the differences that have kind of struck you, good or bad, in terms of just moving from two different systems for him at that age? I'm not even sure how old he is, but he's at high school level, right?
Yeah, so we've got his son who's a junior,
right?
A daughter who's a freshman, both playing varsity basketball. The differences would be obviously the athleticism and the emphasis of getting in the weight room here in the US is a fairly high level. Well, it is here in Charlotte. I mean, a lot of time.
I think that's safe to say anywhere, Coach. Yeah. It's a big emphasis in North America, yeah.
So, yeah, that's definitely been very evident to us here. Style of play, just obviously the athleticism's at a whole different level. The game is played off the bounce, in my opinion, way too much over here. Internationally, it's more about moving the ball and not having the ball in your hands for a long period of time. Make the quick decisions and get rid of it. Where over here, you have multiple players that all dribble, 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 and dribble and keep dribbling, and everyone stands around. And I think it creates unpredictability because they all stand around looking at you going, well, what are you doing? That's probably been the biggest point of difference coming from Australia for our two playing high school basketball. It's very team, ball movement, player movement, style of play in Australia, where here it's, you know, you've obviously got your extreme talented players, and I think coaches and players find it hard to just play team basketball but still allow that super talent to be what they are, which I think would happen anyways. I just think that's what happens if, you know, for example, And Michael Jordan's playing for the Chicago Bulls early in the day. He's still doing his thing. And then all of a sudden, Phil Jackson and Tex Winter come along and go, well, we're going to run the triangle offense to allow some of these other guys opportunities to be contributors and productive off cutting and following the system of the triangle. Well, Michael Jordan still got his and still did his thing, but because they played a different system, it allowed some of their team role players to be real solid contributors. Golden State Warriors today, you know, like they move the ball a lot, they cut a lot, they don't play a lot of isolation basketball, but Durant, Curry, those guys still get off and do what they do. So I think really playing team ball, I mean, the big dynamic is over here is the AAU thing and so many kids transfer out. And so how hard can you really coach the kids here? Because I just get the feel that if you coach them too hard, they get upset and they go leave. They leave and go to a different program. Like, that frustrates me. Like, I would want my son or daughter to be coached hard. A lot of them don't understand how hard kids get coached internationally.
And you're not talking hard in terms of yelling or all that. You're talking hard in terms of holding them accountable to what you teach.
Yeah, 100%. Like, this is our system, and these are the rules. Now follow the rules and do it consistently at a really high level and hold them accountable to that. But, yeah, it just gets a little bit sensitive over here, and that's frustrating, and that's a detriment to the game ultimately.
Particularly to an individual player's development. I find is that you're not telling them what they need to know in an honest way to improve.
Yeah, you're spot on. You're 100% correct there. Like, how do you get better if you're not challenged? And how much do they really want to be challenged? Oh, you're disrespecting my child. Well, come on. Like, no, they're not, you know? And look, don't get me wrong. There are probably situations where coaches go about it the wrong way, but that's not what we're talking about here. Like, they've got to be held accountable when you're going to get coached hard. But that's what it should be. So that's probably been eye-opening for me here. But definitely both of them have enjoyed it. It's a totally different style of game. It's really competitive over here. The whole culture's different. And that's what they have had to adjust to, which has taken them some time to adjust to. There's been no question about that, but have started to find their way and really enjoying their hoops and enjoying the experience, and that's what it's about.
Well, and what a cool thing, really. I mean, that's great insights into, you know, both things. And having been, we play FIBA rules in Canada, but international coaching, I've been across and seen a bunch of stuff, and just the empowering of the weak side player is so much better overseas. Yeah. Whereas weak side players here just feel like they're not involved in anything often.
Yeah, there's not a lot of weak side movement on like a post catch or a wing on ball screen and flaring the weak side and having movement off the ball to keep the defense occupied and not let those guys just tee up on post or on the wing on ball screen. There's a lot of misdirection and offside movement, which ultimately you're harder to guard if you can implement that stuff. And you're right, international teams are very, very good at that.
Well, and again, I don't want people to think this is criticism. This is just, again, in some cases, coaches just don't know or don't see that part of it as much. And I think it's just another area where, you know, North American basketball in general can improve. Because again, when they combine those two things, it's really hard to stop. And you see that at the highest levels. Like, if you've got a player that can really attack in ISO and the weak side is empowered or other players are empowered to be able to play off of that, it's really hard to play against.
Oh, extremely, extremely difficult. I mean, you watch European teams, I mean, under 17 Euro League competition or 19s or just Euro League in particular, you know, like they're the wing on ball, but with the movement off the ball, like, is very difficult to defend when there's guards coming off that are just so skilled and talented that can see the floor or go make plays for themselves. Like, but that, to me, that's what the game's about. The game's about involving everybody all the time and not just two guys and three guys standing around watching. Like, I don't call that a team game if you're playing like that. You know, I want our teams to be a team, playing team ball, moving the ball, moving each other, keeping defenses occupied. Like, because to me, let's flip it to the other end. You've got to be able to defend as a team if you want to be really, really good, just not because you got one really good defender. Well, he ain't going to save the day. So got to play the team game. And that's probably been a bit different over here. Not a lot of movement. And I think like what you said, I think a lot of coaches just don't know. It's easy to teach it this way and just isolate these two guys and or two girls and let them do their thing. So, yeah, a lot, obviously, like as you know, a lot of different layers.
Yeah, no, it's great. And it's obviously an additional conversation. And but it's just fascinating to hear. And, you know, also even from your perspective of coming from, you know, a professional coaching situation to a collegiate coaching situation, forget about just going from obviously Australia to America and the collegiate game here. I mean, just so many things that you must see as a difference or, you know, possibility for improvement or possibility for, again, changing kind of the game or the flow of the game based on some of the experiences that you've had. So, you know, at some point, I'd love to circle back and talk to you about some of that. Maybe after you finish the season here, and that's a great conversation. Coach, thank you so much for taking the time and spending some time with us and sharing this system.
No, I appreciate it. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff on the internet with it and some clinics that I've done if people want to go have a look at it. It's different. But like I said, you know, like that's what we believe in and that's what we implemented and felt that we were successful doing it. And definitely something I bring up with coaches, you know, when I've spent my time at Summer League recruiting for this upcoming season and sitting down talking with European coaches and American coaches and NBA coaches and scouts and I'm talking to them about it. You know, they definitely look at me a little sideways to start with, and but it's just different. But that's what the game's about. It's about trying to evolve the game, and for our system and our club, that's what we did.
Tremendous. And again, coaches, you can certainly Google your name and find a bunch of the videos and stuff on YouTube or just in general. And I'll make sure I post some of those links too, Coach, when we post this, so it's easy for coaches to be able to see some of your clinic information as well. So all the best for the rest of the season, and we'll talk again soon, Coach. Thank you.
No problem. Appreciate it.
A quick interruption to this week's episode to let you know what you're missing if you are not currently a member of BasketballImmersion.com. Basketball Immersion is one-stop shopping for video learning to stimulate your basketball coaching using evidence-based practices. Watch hundreds of videos covering BDT shooting, zero-second skill training, how we teach using small-sided games and a games approach to coaching, as well as team concepts and systems like trail trap, flow offense, two-sided fast break, and much, much more. NCAA, NBA, pro, high school, and youth coaches are amongst the thousands of coaches who are a part of our community. Go to basketballimmersion.com today to stimulate your basketball coaching.
To find out more about Coach and all we spoke about today, please take a look at the show notes for today's episode. I love to share the game and have basketball coaching conversations, so connect with me on social media. You can find all my social media information and all your membership, clinic, and consulting needs at basketballimmersion.com. That concludes today's episode. I know there are so many podcasts out there. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the Basketball Podcast with me, your host, Chris Oliver. Please subscribe and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues so that we can keep bringing you the best of what's out there and share the game.